I'd like to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:31 p.m. on Thursday, March 30th. Please turn off all of your cell phones. Members present today, Vice Chair Klayman, Senator Merrick, Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Chair Kawasaki, Senator Bjorkman, will be here shortly. I wanted to thank Carrie Cooper-Ryder from Senate Records for being here today, and Lisa Denny, the moderator from the Legislative Information Office. On today's agenda, we will have an overview of the Alaska State Defense Force, and then we will also have a first initial hearing of Senate Bill 71, the pay for the Alaska State Defense Force. We'll start first with the overview of the Alaska Defense Force. We have in the room with us Dr. Craig Christensen, the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We also have Brigadier General Simon Brown with the Alaska State Defense Force. And Angela LaFlame is also here, the Legislative Liaison for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We do have a presentation in front of you. Do you want to set that up so that it's... We're going to take a brief at ease. Okay, we are back on the record. Welcome. Today we have with us a presentation on the Alaska Defense Force, and you guys have slides to present. For the record, if you just state your name and affiliation.
Well, good afternoon. Craig Christensen, Deputy Commissioner, Military and Veterans Affairs. With me, I have Brigadier General Alaska Simon Brown, the Commander of Alaska State Defense Force. He will be going through a presentation of the Alaska State Defense Force. Before he does, just as a very quick overview, this is the organization of our department, of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And you'll see, I just really want to call your attention to down on the left, the dotted line. What is in that dotted line, the Air and Army National Guard, the Alaska State Defense Force, and the Alaska Naval Militia is by statute what is considered the Alaska Organized Militia. Within that, the Army and the Air National Guard and the Alaska Naval Militia, those members have a federal commission, and they are, members of the military. They're associated with the Department of Defense. The Alaska State Defense Force is completely state. So all of the members are volunteer. However, when members of the Alaska State Defense Force are called to state active duty, they can be called to state active duty under a pay status or under an unpaid status. Typically, if there's a disaster that happens and it's a declared disaster, they'll be called to state active duty on a paid status. Currently, right now, if we call them to state active duty to do some sort of a specific training, they are in an unpaid status. So at the end, after this presentation, when we talk about the bill, that's what we're talking about, is the possibility of bringing them onto state active duty for training and in a paid status. So with that, I'm going to kick it over to Brigadier General Brown, and we'll go through a presentation on the Alaska State Defense Force.
Welcome, General Brown. State your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, through the chair. General Simon Brown, the commander of the Alaska State Defense Force, which is a component of the Department of Veteran Military Affairs. Next slide. That's good. Our motto is closer to home and ready to serve. We have approximately 200 members across the state, 23 detachments this time. And we have that motto because all the people live in the communities and they serve those communities, and they're ready to respond on a moment's notice. And for the record, we were established under Alaska Statute 2605-100 that gives us our legal authorization. And there's a role, our role is to augment the Alaska National Guard in case of emergency. And we respond to different emergencies across the state, and I'll cover some of those later. Next slide. our mission statement. Basically, our mission statement is to collaborate with citizens, communities, Native corporations and groups, non-government agencies and other government agencies, and we train to cooperate with them to respond to emergencies, and we train and plan and prepare to mitigate and to recover from natural and man-made disasters. Our members consist a variety of people from all walks of life and all professions. We have doctors, we have lawyers, we have engineers, hazmat specialists, and other skills such as accountants and educators who belong to us. We have school principals, just different walks of life who bring a lot to the table to help us train and prepare for any emergency that may occur in Alaska. And the way we train to support the communities, and that's our whole goal, is to support communities. And during non-disasters, we train to help those communities to build resilience by bringing these different professions we have to a community and giving them some ability to respond to certain things they own. There's a lot of emergencies that does not reach the level of a state disaster, but it affects a local community. So by having these different professionals on the team and in the communities, they can train, teach, and assist communities with responding to those smaller disasters. We do domain awareness, keeping the National Guard and other government agencies in form of environment and other anomalies that occur throughout Alaska. And our medical support is always there to assist in different times for medical assistance. Some of the recent things we responded to, as you know, Typhoon Merbok in last September. The initial start of that disaster, the weather was bad and assistance couldn't fly into the area because of the winds and the bad weather. But we had people on the ground as the disaster was occurring who was responding and helping citizens until additional resources and help could come. We also was extensively involved in the pandemic in 20 through 21. Every summer we respond in some form or fashion with wildland fires. And of course, the other big one was the South Central earthquake in December 18. We assisted the state and FEMA during that. I think that the State Defense Force bring valuable assets to the state and especially to local communities and to employers. We teach our soldiers discipline, ethics, and to take pride in their work and being responsible. If they say they're going to do something, to do it. And that's a big plus to the community, but more so to employers. Employers know that if they're members of part of the Defense Force, that that member can be counted on to be on time, to have ethics, and to work hard. And those then translate into the community, helping the community to build resilience and to grow and be somewhat self-sufficient during different smaller events.
So I'll kick it back over to me for the record, Craig Christensen, Deputy Commissioner. So the authority to activate the Alaska State Defense Force comes from the governor to the Adjutant General, General Sachs. When they are activated, they are under the command and control of the Adjutant General. They will most likely be placed within the structure of the National Guard, and so they'll be providing assistance to communities through the support, through the command and support of the National Guard. So if you look at, for example, Typhoon Merbok, the great advantage that we had was as we were activating the National Guard, which is primarily a road system National Guard currently, and we're activating in, Anchorage or Fairbanks, and there's a storm going on out west, we have to wait for the storms to subside before we can get the National Guard out there. With the Alaska State Defense Force, currently 200 members in about 23 communities, currently building, we're aiming for about 500 members over about twice as many communities. If you figure a village, if we can have five members in that village, they're on the ground. When something happens, they're able to respond within, within an hour, and they They provide a lot of valuable services to the community, and even just things like debris removal and communications. They have communication capabilities, if kind of like ham radio, where even when communications are down, we're able to reach out to the ASDF and talk about what's going on in the ground on the ground. So before I kick it over to talk about our bill, I want to pause in case there are questions on the Alaska State Defense Force.
Sure. Yep. Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Kawasaki. And for the record, I am the subcommittee chairperson for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Subcommittee. So I have a few questions. The first is, are members authorized to carry weapons?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, currently members of the Alaska State Defense Force are not armed. We are working on a policy that only when under orders by the governor or the adjutant general, there would be the possibility that they could, after significant training, they would follow the same standards of state troopers. But that policy has not been enacted. So as of now, no. There's a possibility in the future, under a very rare circumstance, picture 911, we have tensions going on over, west of here. There could be a possibility, but only under orders and only when they're trained up to the qualification standards of the state troopers.
Great, thank you. Another question. If one of the members is injured, during either training or when they are activated, who covers the cost of that injury?
Through the state, first of all, through the chair, Senator Merrick. So through the state and by statute, it's workers' compensation.
Great, thank you. And just one further, your legislative liaison thoughtfully provided us with a list of the locations and number of members. And it looks like you have about 211 members, 55 of which are in Wasilla, 50 of which are in Kodiak. And I will note that Kodiak has a large, U.S. Coast Guard air station. So, there's quite a response team available in Kodiak if necessary. So what is the plan to increase, if at least half of the members currently are in, either on the road system or where that we already have somewhat of a military presence, how are you going to recruit these additional 300 people in, say, rural Alaska?
Well, several communities have already reached out to me. Oh, through the chair, sorry. Several communities already reached out to me and asked for detachments, and so I'm currently working with those communities to start. They see the value in it, because if they got people on the ground who's been trained in the ICS system, who understand the operation of emergency response, is a very valuable thing to those citizens. So that's what I'm working on, and I'm going around the state. I have people at this moment in Gamble and Sabunga recruiting as we speak to start up detachments in those two locations. And so that's my plan, to go around to each community, see who's interested, and then if we can find leadership and people interested to start detachments. And my goal is as many small communities as possible to get at least a 5-man team who bring to that team a communication specialist, a domain awareness specialist, a person with some kind of medical training, and then a leader to lead that.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Merrick.
On slide 7, you list some of the most recent response activities. If it's possible to provide the committee with the number of people that responded to each of those disasters. Thank you very much.
And through the chair, Senator Merrick, yes, we can provide that for you. As far as the expansion efforts, we're working very hard. So this is our expansion year for the ASDF. And for instance, earlier this week I was in Gamble and last week I was in Bethel, and we have been working very hard. And General Brown has been out in many rural areas to increase. And, I think that our goal of 500 might not be, reached in a year, but that's, I would say, in 2 years.
Great, thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We've been joined by Senator Bjorkman. Are there more questions about the State Defense Force? I guess I just have a general question. So if they're not activated Defense Force members and you've asked them to do something, what if they don't do it? I mean, are they obligated by some contract or other?
Well, we do fall under the Alaska Military Code of Justice. But to this date, everybody who has joined has never refused or even indicated they didn't want to do something. The people who are in the Defense Force and who join are people who have a community sense of community involvement, and they know why they're there. They know what they join. When they come in, they're briefed on their obligation, and that we look for people who have that ethical background to want to help someone else. And to this date, I have not had one member who says, I'm not going to do that. Again, when they in process, that's part of the questions we ask them. Are you committed to your community and to the state of Alaska?
And Chair Kawasaki, they are volunteers, and they, you know, have the opportunity to volunteer or to not volunteer. So they wouldn't find themselves in a position where they're being ordered to do something and have to make the decision of to do it or not. But what we find is that when the call goes out, there's an overwhelming response of volunteers.
Let me add it through the chair.
Yes, General.
One of my things that I have within the organization is family first. So look at what your family needs are before you volunteer. And if I know you have a family need, I won't let you volunteer. And then two is to your civilian employer, because I can't pay you. So you don't want to mess that up. And then the Defense Force. And so that process has worked great for the Defense Force.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much to both of you. Are there any further questions? Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologize for my tardiness today. I'm wondering, as we kind of have the State Defense Force called out, is there any projection that by activating this group of folks that we could save the state money in any way? Would the state not have to do things because the State Defense Force is able to step up? Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, I look at it more of an insurance policy. It's not saving money up front, but you know, when a disaster occurs, you really want someone to come in and help you if it's your community. So we don't look at the Alaska State Defense Force to save money, but someone's going to do the work. And so the money's going to be spent on someone's going to do the work. So and the best people that we feel to do it are the people that are in the community that are part of the Alaska State Defense Force.
Through the chair, if I may add to that, last year we donated approximately 27,000 hours of training time that didn't have to pay for. It was all volunteer time. So that's where I see the money saving to the state of Alaska is getting a group of trained people who can respond in a professional manner to an emergency.
Understood. And so based on, I see we have a zero fiscal note here for this piece of legislation, and this may have been ground that you already covered, but with a zero fiscal note here and previous experience of National Guard in Alaska, what do we expect appropriations or costs to look like in the future?
So through the chair, Senator Bjorkman. So our and no, we haven't actually started talking about the bill yet, so we haven't covered that. It is a zero fiscal note. This allows us to do it. We are not proposing any budgetary requests for the training because, you know, first we need to be allowed to pay people for training. Most likely it would be we're not talking about significant amounts of training and significant amounts of money that we probably wouldn't be able to absorb it out of their current budget. So, for example, one of the key things that the Alaska State Defense Force does. They have three water purification systems. They're maybe about the size of the back of a pickup truck. They can be moved by helicopter into a community that is having water issues. It's not a system that someone can just walk up to and turn on and have it work. It's about a 3-day training. So if we were to bring a 5-person team from wherever, including the travel costs, the lodging, and the training, for a 3-day period, that training is going to run us probably about $3,500. So when we're talking the type of training that we want to be able to bring people onto paid state active duty for, we're not talking like drill pay. We're not talking about every week, the 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. We're not talking about paying them for every time they do training. We're talking about very specific training that we may have to organize and bring people together for.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Senator Bjorkman.
Very good. And so I guess leading to some of my questioning here is the amount of money that the governor had in his budget proposal for, I think it was like $2.5 million or something. That certainly is not nothing. What would you expect that amount of money to be used for in relationship to this piece of legislation?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman. For the record, it's Craig Christensen, Deputy Commissioner. So a bigger discussion of ASDF goes around our expansion. Currently, the ASDF which is part of the organized militia, they are all volunteers and do not have a structure within our department. There is no state employee General Brown is not a state employee. No one is. There's a lot of things that we need to bring them into the department for. So our proposal is to stand them up as a division. And so that 2.1 actually request is stand them up as a division. Much like the Alaska Army and Air National Guard, the commander would also be the division director. It's the same model we do with the Army and the Air National Guard, where the commander is also a director, a state director, and then for administrative staff, just to bring them up as a division. What that does is that gives the authority, the state authority, and to be able to function a lot more efficiently. Currently, everything they do is on volunteer time on weekends, and if in order to bring them to the force that we want to be able to use during disaster response, we need to have a much more well-oiled machine, if you'd say. So that request not only includes standing up as a division, but there's training involved, there's equipping, to bring from 200 to 500 people, uniforms, cold weather gear, some of the things that we use in the field, such as, tents and that kind of stuff. So really it's that request brings them into the department, solidly into the department, and equips and trains them.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. So let me clarify. So General Brown, are you you're not an employee of the, you're a volunteer? You're a volunteer. Okay, great. Thank you. Senator Klayman.
If you're all volunteer, this is like who pays for the uniform?
I do.
So the whole defense follow-up? Oh, okay. So the whole defense force is volunteer, and are you all uniformed, and do you all have uniforms?
We all have uniforms, and to this date, we've been able to get uniformed through different methods. Some of us find, some of them are given to ex-soldiers. I have, about half of my force is ex-military, so they have uniforms already. But yes, and part of this, what I don't have is a lot of cold weather and survivor gear. And that's what that $2.5 million would assist me, $2.1, assist me in getting the equipment, because now I have to send people out on emergencies, especially during inclement weather. And I take the risk of looking for a person who's injured and having another person injured because they're not equipped properly.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Are there any other questions on the State Defense Force before we move to Senate Bill 71? Okay. Hearing no more questions, we'll go ahead and roll on to Senate Bill 71. Senate Bill 71 is one page, one section, or well, two sections with an effective date. I guess whoever's going to present. Thank you, Commissioner.
For the record, Craig Christensen, Deputy Commissioner. So our proposal would be to amend the statute in order to allow us to pay for training and community service activities when they're brought onto state active duty in certain situations. So currently, let's talk about state active duty. So when you bring someone onto state active duty, you can bring them on as paid or unpaid. So with the Alaska State Defense Force, every time they, if they come on for training, they're coming on as unpaid. If they're coming on as for a disaster, then they're coming on as paid. So what we would like to propose is that we be allowed to put them on to paid state active duty for training. Now, as I mentioned before, that's not all training. It's only very specific training in specific circumstances. The far, far, far majority of their training is unpaid. So when they come on to their drill status for their 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, that is not paid. That's not paid training. We're talking about specific training that we, like my example of the water purification training. So that's basically, we're asking that last sentence be removed from the statute to allow us to be able to pay for training or community service. An example of community service, which also would be very specific instances. Let's say Arctic Winter Games are coming up, and it's a very large event that's going to occur. And let's say that the governmental organization in that area requested some assistance, and in that situation, they would be the ones funding it. It wouldn't be coming out of state funds. But then we would be able to actually put them on paid state active duty if they were assisting. And, but when we say community service, we're talking about, something that a governmental organization has officially requested. We're not talking about, just going out cleaning on the side of the road or anything like that.
Great. Thank you. And just for the record, it's so statute Title 39-2110. That last citation's on the public officer and employee travel regulations. So it deals with per diem, mileage allowance, allowable expenses, travel costs, and travel outside of the state. So if anybody was wondering. Senator Klayman.
I'm curious not so much about the specific training where or community service where, say, sent out to Western Alaska to help after a disaster. But if, say, the forces meeting once a month for like a 2-day training, or maybe quarterly, maybe they get together for a 3-day weekend for 3 days of training. Would that then under this modification mean they would be able to be paid for that period?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, this change would allow us to do it, but in practice we would not be, that is, our intent is not, we don't have the budget to pay people for every training. What you're describing would be their routine drill, which we would not be paying for. We're mainly looking at very specific types of training that pop up that are specific training that we have to you know, maybe gather some people together from a few different communities. There's travel involved, lodging involved, and that's what the you know, when we say pay our allowances, that's, you know, the allowances are the you know, per diem and lodging and air travel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. Let's see, are there further questions before we open it up to public testimony? Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Kawasaki. Deputy Commissioner Christensen, how much, what is the pay range for these folks? Is it consistent? Is it hourly?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, state active duty for ASDF or National Guard or Naval Militia is by statute equivalent to what an active duty military, it follows the military pay scale. So, you know, I don't have the breakdown in front of me, but we can easily give you an example of a few different ranks and of what that pay would be.
Yep, Senator Merrick.
So the volunteers have different ranks. How is that determined?
Through the chair, Brigadier General Brown. It's just like the military. We have from private through general, and so it depends on your time in service, your military background, your experience. So all the members are. If you saw one of us in uniform and an Army guy standing next to him, you would be able to tell the difference. The rank structure is the same.
So through the chair, Senator Merrick, the Alaska State Defense Force mirrors the Army in their rank structure. So if a member was previously in the armed forces and they left at a certain rank, they would be brought in at that rank. If they were not in the service before and they have a special skill, then they would find the equivalent rank. Otherwise, they're going to start at the lowest rank.
Great, thank you.
Great, thank you, Senator Merrick. Any more questions before we go to public testimony? Okay, seeing none, we'll open up public testimony. Is there anybody in the room who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 71? And anybody online who'd like to testify? I see nobody signed up to testify with public comments, so we'll go ahead and close public testimony at this point. And we'll bring the bill back to the committee. Are there any other questions before we set the bill aside today? Senator Klayman.
One question. It seems odd, because this involves allowing to pay for training, it seems odd that there's no fiscal impact, because it seems like the whole point of it is to allow you to pay periodically. And why does the fiscal note show no impact? That doesn't mean I don't support the idea. It's just...
So through the chair, Senator Klayman, I would say that it's a two-step process. So first, we have to know that we're going to be allowed to do it. And then if we had significant training, it would be in a future budget request. But having looked at what we'd be bringing people on training for and seeing the cost, I think it is something that we would absorb in their budget. I mean, for instance, the training that we did for the water purification, you know, if we're talking, you know, three-day training costs about $3,000. You know, they currently have a budget of $400,000. We don't see requesting additional funding specifically for this bill.
Okay. Terrific, Senator Klayman. Thank you. Let's see, are there any other questions for the two presenters at this point on Senate Bill 71? Okay, hearing none, we'll set Senate Bill 71 aside for a future hearing. I'd like to thank both of you for being here and for your service to the country and for your service to the state now. I'd like to take amendments on Senate Bill 71, that's this bill regarding the State Defense Force pay, and Senate Bill 21 regarding strategic plans for state agencies to my office by the middle of next week, sometime in the middle, 4-6, I guess, it's April 6th at 5 p.m., if you can. And that'll conclude our meeting today. Does anybody have any other thing? as they'd like to say at this point. Okay. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and adjourn the Senate State Affairs. Oh, I'm sorry. I should say that we will not have a meeting next week. Next week is Easter week, and so we will not have a meeting on Tuesday or Thursday. And the next meeting will be the following Tuesday with an agenda to be announced. So that concludes our meeting today. Senate State Affairs Committee is adjourned at 4:07 p.m.